life did I think I would like to see a dictator. But if there's going to be one, I want it to be Trump.
So that tape came from a recent conservative meeting, one where Steve Bannon was in the crowd. And what you don't hear in that tape is that the crowd gives a wild standing ovation. And I know it's a little hard to hear, but what the woman in that tape said who was speaking is that I never thought I'd want a dictator in my life. But if the heir is going to be a dictator, I want it to be Trump. So I'm going to start this week with values. There's an old saying that issues divide and values bring us together. So I spend a lot of time in Portland, Oregon. I live in this area. And there's a gentleman that I talk to with some regularity. And for the most part, we don't have pints on the weekend or anything, but he and I do get to talk quite frequently, generally at least once a week. And I've been talking with him for, he's an acquaintance, he's not a friend, but I talk to him a lot. And in the 8 years I've known him, I've never ever seen the guy shaken. I don't spend a lot of time in his life. I see him, you know, once a week, you know, when I have a business transaction with him. And then, you know, we chat a little bit. We're both Seahawks fans. And then it's done. But I recently made a delivery to him, and the delivery was, it was really hard to get to him. It's this block where the streets aren't very wide. And of course, the construction company isn't doing a real good job of maintaining that area. So it just made the whole thing complicated. And he says to me, he says, it's so hard down here. It's harder and harder all the time. And I go, yeah, you know, it's downtown, making these kinds of deliveries is tough. You know, and I expect it always. And he goes, no. He goes, it's not just that. He said, I found a dead homeless woman yesterday. And I just about fell back on my heels. Hold on. Did you say you found a dead homeless woman? And he said, yeah. He said, I showed up to work and I saw a woman laying half in and half out of a tent. Oh, okay. He said, and the way her face was laid on the asphalt, there's no way that she's just sleeping. He said, it had to be something more. She's passed out. She's hurt something. He said, so I walked up to the tent to hey, ma'am, what's you okay? And he said she didn't respond. And then he looked in the tent and saw the bottom half of her body that was in the tent was, it didn't have any, she didn't have any clothes on the bottom half of her body. And he, oh God, she got assaulted or something. So he immediately calls the police. He didn't touch her. Police show up. Appreciate the call, any and all the rest. By the way, she's dead. Thanks for letting us know. In the 8 years I've spoke to this guy, I've never, ever seen him shaken. And he said to me, he said directly, I've been very shaken by that. I've not gotten over seeing it. I can't get it out of my head. And I, that's, it sucks to have that happen, but it's good when somebody has that level of empathy. See, when I see homeless people, or even when I just see people hurt, I don't have to know them. I don't have to have a direct connection to them in order to hurt when they hurt. So this is completely outside of sports, because him and I always talk about the Seahawks, but not this time. And when I saw that he was empathetic, I said, that's good. That's the kind of empathy we should all have. Yeah, it sucks to be in pain, but at least you have that empathy about you. This idea, this conservative idea of rugged individualism, it's all me, it's up to me, I did it all, you're only looking out for you and not for anybody else, but you and maybe those more immediate to you, that you don't see all humans as consequential or of some importance. And if someone else isn't doing well, then that's fine, because you're still doing well. When you promote that kind of an idea, that as long as you're okay, then the world is okay. It doesn't lend itself to any level of empathy. It doesn't lend itself to caring for others. It makes your view very narrow. You're able to see straight in front of you, and that's about it. You never, ever stop to look around. And when I wonder this woman hanging half in and half out of the tent, half naked, probably assaulted before or after she died, sorry, I have to wonder how many people just walked right by her, didn't even see her, didn't even bother to look down, or maybe even worse, just stepped right over her because her body merely became, say, a rock in their path. They can't see anything around them, right in front of them, and that's it. And if it isn't happening to them, then it isn't happening. It's really easy to complain about the president, President Donald Trump. It's super easy. But the harder thing to do is to really, really think about how we got there. Yeah, he's cold and he's horrible and he's a pile of human waste. But when he's gone, we're still going to have a lot of the same social problems that we have now. And so the culture that we have is what really needs to change. Once he's out of office, all of the neo-Nazis that support him, well, they're still going to be there. And it's very unlikely that their minds are going to have changed. One of the things that has been good, if I can say so, about this particular presidency is, I think, I'm not the only person sort of looking at it the way that I do, trying to get this larger picture from it. I think that other folks are starting to do that as well. I think America is finally holding a mirror up to itself, and it's not happy, by and large, with what it sees. There's an article recently in Politico, the headline, I didn't even bother read the damn thing. The headline said that Donald Trump is on track to win in 2020 by a landslide. I don't want to read that. Holy hell. It might be right. But then again, they might be trying to motivate people. I remember after Donald Trump won, but he didn't win the popular vote. He won the Electoral College, but he didn't win the popular vote. There was this other thing that Politico did where they printed the names of all 535 of the people, that are the members of the Electoral College, that cast the actual ballots. It said, here's the people, here's how to get in touch with them, and that's all it said. They didn't encourage you to call them or write them or find them and beat them up in parking lots. It just said, here are their names, here's how you get a hold of them. And that's it. I think Politico every so often, although they're not explicitly partisan, I think they do stuff like that just to get people motivated. And the power that is held by this basket of deplorables, by these horrible, horrible people, now that they have it, it is incredibly unlikely that they're ever going to let it go. So the thing that's happening right now is a part of the Donald Trump 2020 strategy is Donald Trump is looking at himself and he's looking at all of the people that support him. And dig this, he says, man, are me and my people getting a raw deal? We are getting screwed. This is real. We're getting screwed. We're getting hurt. We're having to go without. And it's all because the world is against conservatives. The media, although it's over 90% conservative owned, is clearly against conservatives. Talk radio, even though it's almost 100% conservative, is against conservatives. And then social media, despite the fact that that social media companies benefit far more from having a Republican in power, because Republicans tend to have a hands-off approach whenever it comes to the millionaires, the billionaires, and the criminals. They don't touch them. Those are their guys. And even though that's the reality, here he is pissing and moaning about how social media is just not being fair to conservatives.
Well, we have to do something. I tell you, I have many, many millions of followers on Twitter, and it's different than it used to be. Things are happening. Names are taken off. People aren't getting through. You've heard the same complaints. And it seems to be if they're conservative, if they're Republicans, if they're in a certain group, there's discrimination and big discrimination. I see it absolutely on Twitter and Facebook, which I have also, and others I see, but I've really focused more on the one platform.
So he obviously has a very narrow view of the world, and it's only happening to him, and it's so unfair, and how could this be? Rather than taking a look around at the things that are really happening, they're instead looking to themselves as the real victims here, as the true victims here, and how dare they try to silence us? There's another thing that's happened in Russia, and the headline: Russia criminalizes the spread of online news which disrespects the government. They now have a law in Russia for which you can go to prison for criticizing the government. We have heard this kind of talk from our president before about how he wants to change the libel laws, how he'd very much like to change what gets shared on social media. So I think the conservatives realize, partially as a consequence of the Trump presidency, that people are not necessarily all that happy with the way the country looks. And people aren't really happy anymore with the way the country looks, the way they look at themselves, and the way that we are represented around the world. And with that, maybe the president's on track for a landslide. Maybe. But then again, maybe he's not. I don't know that we've ever had somebody under so much criminal investigation before. No matter how the economy is doing, I think people got to be looking at that and going, that's just not who we are. And we know that the president is tight with Putin. We know that he has meetings with Putin all the time. And we know that not because of our government or because of our White House, but because Russian state-run media is the one that tells us about it. And Trump, too, has his own state media, and that's Fox News. We've seen the president praise dictators to no end. We've heard the president himself say that he wants to be a dictator. And now his followers are openly calling to not have the 2020 election. This is a real thing. The numbers of his followers that believe that he has the full right, and this is written nowhere. There's no legal reasoning for this or anything. The number of people that believe that he shouldn't have to compete in another election, that he should simply be president for life, or at the very least cancel the 2020 election because conservatives feel like they're just getting so screwed over. It's a majority, not of the people, but of his supporters.
What are the consequences of a president whose foreign policy seems built on transactional relationships that benefit his interests more than America's, and in some cases ideological, and in other cases financial? Is this the emergence of what you might call the Trump doctrine? Mr. Trump cheered the Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro's attacks on fake news. Yes, he used the phrase. And after President Trump took a not-so-veiled shot at his political opponents here at home, Bolsonaro did too. Then Bolsonaro publicly gave the president his endorsement for 2020. The president effusively praised Bolsonaro, never once mentioning the Brazilian leader's past incendiary comments about homosexuality and women. Folks, it's not just today. The president has united with authoritarian leaders of sorts all around the world while downplaying or overlooking some of the worst human rights abuses. Whether it's praising the leader of the Philippines for executing suspected drug dealers, saying Kim Jong-un wasn't to blame for Otto Wambir's death, downplaying Putin's reported killing of journalists, dismissing the Saudi crown prince's role in the Khashoggi murder, or largely overlooking Chinese President Xi's record, on re-educating Muslims, millions of them, in Chinese hands.
And so Trump comes out and says that the media, social media, is dead set against him. And I mentioned a little bit ago about how Fox News is effectively state-run news for the Donald Trump administration. No sooner does he say that, and here comes Tucker Carlson with his tech tyranny segment.
More evidence that the sinister tech monopoly Google is not on the level, not at all what it claims to be. New leaked communications from inside that company show that Google employees discussed suppressing conservative news websites in their search engine right after the 2016 election. In one post from November 9th, 2016, a Google engineer called Scott Beyer called the Daily Caller and Breitbart opinion blogs, quote, and said that Google employees should reduce the visibility of both sites in search results compared to, quote, legitimate news organizations. Other employees said it was the company's job to provide more, quote, context to rebut news outlets they dislike.
And it's measurable. All of these really dishonest things that are being done by the state-run Fox News, by conservative media outlets, both written and on radio, and the fact that the president keeps saying these wildly untrue things and claiming that he's the real victim here, his supporters are the real victims here. It appears that all of that stuff is having a real world effect. So there was a poll that came out recently, a Suffolk USA Today poll, and the president went ahead and cited it because his reading of the poll, much was everyone else's reading of the poll, was that over 50% of people think that the Mueller investigation is a witch hunt. And I heard that number, and that's about 20 points higher than I'd heard in the past. See, the Nazis that support him down in the 30s, those folks are always going to believe whatever he says. But for regular folks to go, yes, it's a witch hunt, that was pretty stunning to me. So I decided to dig into this poll question. So the question that was asked, and it said 54% found that it was a witch hunt, okay? So the question goes like this. Anyone that knows anything about polling is going to get right away what the problem is with this question. The question is, President Trump has called the special counsel's investigation a witch hunt and said he's been subjected to more investigations than previous presidents because of politics. Do you agree? Do you agree? To which question? There's two questions in there. And whenever there's polling on this done, they will ask individual questions, one question at a time. And then sometimes they will, in the full report of how the poll went, they will collate some of those together, but then they will show you the individual questions. This one, they push two questions together. And yeah, he has been investigated more than any president. And that's because he's openly committing crimes. And we're finding evidence of past crimes. So it's a terrible poll, and it's a poorly worded question, but then the president gets to tweet it out, and he gets to cite it as evidence and believe that the majority of the country is with him, and the dum-dums and white supremacists that support him are always going to be there, but the rest of America might see a poll like that, might not dig into the flawed question and go, you know what, maybe so. Yeah, maybe. Maybe the president is innocent and maybe has been subjected to a witch hunt, even though this investigation has produced more than 30 indictments, i.e. witches. Folks are going to look at that and go, wow, yeah, maybe he is. Maybe the world is being unfair to him. So is this liberal media bias? The fact that they asked this flawed question, which is going to go ahead and poison the information well that so many folks are sipping from?
What do you think of Bob Mueller?
I think Bob Mueller is an American hero. I don't feel the investigation is a witch hunt. I wish it had happened on a quicker timetable, but it didn't, and that's unfortunate. But at the same time, it's not a real criticism of the special counsel that on the timing, because there were a lot of surprises.
That's former Trump counsel Ty Cobb. This guy used to be the president's lawyer. He's asked, is this a witch hunt? And he says straight out, no, I don't think that it is. And I think that Bob Mueller is an American hero. Yes, Bob Mueller served in Vietnam. So conservative logic, Bob Mueller serves in Vietnam and then comes back and works for his country for the rest of his working life. That guy is a scumbag with a whole lot of conflicts, who hangs out with 13 angry Democrats and is obviously friends with Lying James Comey. But Trump, who got fake doctor reports so that he could get out of going to Vietnam, has done nothing in his life to serve his country, has never ever thought that America was great, and only ran for president because he got pissed at NBC because they wouldn't pay him enough money. That guy's an American hero. Dig this. We have been at war with North Korea for what, 60, 70 years now? There's never been a declared end of the war. Okay, so therefore, the North Koreans, the leaders, the military, the leader, those are considered the enemy. Treason is considered aid and comfort to the enemy. I heard a gentleman call into a talk show earlier this week and assert the fact that Trump is committing treason. Now, even I'm not that far to the left. I can't see it. But he points out, we're still at war with them. There was never a declared end of the war. They're still considered the enemy. But here's Donald Trump going there and giving him everything that he wants. Everything. Photo ops, bows to his military, lifts the sanctions, you know, just says we'll stop the joint military exercises, just gives him all of this stuff for nothing in return. And not only do we get nothing, Kim Jong-un decides to ramp up his nuclear weapons program. And he says, that guy is the enemy. Trump has given him everything he wants. There were sanctions just put on North Korea by Congress. The next day, the president canceled them, vetoed them. Nope, absolutely not. No sanctions on them. And when they don't have any sanctions, they're able to do business with more of the rest of the world. When they're able to do business with more of the rest of the world, they're able to build more bombs and faster. The president is actually helping North Korea against us. And in North Korea, there's only state-run media. That's it. So the people don't know that our president is a brain-dead moron who's the leader of the white supremacist movement, you know, and he's stupid. He can't speak in complete sentences. They don't know that stuff about him. They just know that he's the American president. And now there's a tape of Donald Trump bowing to the North Korean military, bowing to the military leaders. And that tape of the American president bowing to military leaders in North Korea plays on a constant loop in North Korea. And this president is providing, you could make the argument that country, that leader, whom is our enemy, with aid and comfort. When you think of it that way, it's just stunning. But it's really hard to focus on things like that because, of course, there's all these domestic things going on too. And I understand it's a lot to take in. So I got sidetracked a little bit, but back to the Mueller thing. So the Mueller thing, the Mueller report, I'm taping on Saturday, the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. And the Mueller report came out yesterday. And immediately I get a text from my producer. My goodness gracious, Melvin, it's here. The Mueller report, it's here. And I tried to join in the excitement with him. Because when I first heard the Mueller investigation had started, I was very, very excited to see their support. But the more and more I learned about the way these reports are conducted, I said, I don't think it's going to be what we think it's going to be. See, people were expecting a report to come out and the president to just get immediately indicted. The way these things are played out is as Mueller finds crimes in the course of the investigation, he does the indictments as he goes, and he indicted more than 30 people. And I wasn't excited for two reasons, and I talked about this a few weeks on the show, but I think it bears repeating. I said, the Mueller report's about to come out, and it's not going to be what Democrats think that it is. It's not going to provide you with what you want. It is not going to remove the president from office. Why? One, there's an argument that you can't indict a sitting president. There's an argument the other way too. But I think, and I believe this all along, the way this is going to be played is they're not going to indict a sitting president. And I said, that's one. So even if there's a suggestion in there that he's going to get indicted, it's not going to happen because he's a sitting president. What happens when he gets out of office? Who knows? The other thing, Barr, the attorney general, this guy is an upside down and inside out crook who has been protecting crooked Republican politicians for a long time. This was the guy who was the attorney general for George W. Bush, who on December 24th, 1991, suggested that he should pardon everybody involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Why? Because it would heal the nation. No, it was to protect all the criminals that were going to go down for the crimes that were committed by the Reagan administration. And one of those folks that was going to go down was him. So if these folks that he pardoned kept getting pressed, eventually they were going to turn and George W. Bush's name was going to come up and he might have spent the rest of his life in prison. And it was Bob Barr that said, hey, just pardon them all and that'll kill the investigation. That guy is now the attorney general again. And the reason why he's the attorney general is because he protected criminals then and he's going to protect the criminals now. And that report, when Bob Mueller's done with it, goes right to Bob Barr's office. And what happened? As soon as that report was finished, it went to Bob Barr's office. I said, don't get excited about the Mueller report because you're not going to get a presidential indictment out of it. It's not going to remove him from office. And B, we might not even see it. And if we see it, well, it's not going to be the things that we need to see. I said, everybody needs to quit putting all of their faith and their hope and all the rest in the Mueller report, because that's not where the criminal indictments are going to come from. Where are they going to come from? The criminal indictments are going to come out of the Southern District of New York, because there were so many things that were found by the Mueller investigation that they handed them to SDNY. And SDNY also had their own investigations going on anyway. So the things that are going to throw the president in prison, or at the very least make the rest of his life a litigious hell, are going to be the things that come out of the Southern District of New York. So what you have, the president's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, went through two different trials in two different districts. For a long time, he wore two ankle bracelets because he's so crooked. And between the two different sentencing judges, he got over 7.5 years in prison, okay? And Manafort's lawyer did a funny thing when he came out of prison both times. The first time he came out of the courtroom after the first trial, when Manafort got like 2.5 years or 3 years or whatever it was, he said, this case proves that there's no collusion, no Russia collusion, no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. Funny. I've heard that somewhere before. And it was just seen as this thing. But see, when he came out of the courtroom and he made that statement, there weren't a bunch of people around to listen to him. It was just the reporters. And reporters, well, no matter how they feel, they're going to remain quiet when that kind of thing happens. Then, after the next case, where Manafort got even more time, the lawyer did it again. He came out of the courthouse and he said that this case proves that there's no collusion, no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. Only this time, there were other ears around to hear it.
Judge Jackson conceded that there was absolutely no evidence of any Russian collusion in this case. So that makes two courts. Two courts have ruled no evidence of any collusion with any Russian.
That's not what she
said. Part number two. Very sad.
That's not what she said.
Very sad.
That's not what she said.
For such a callous, harsh sentence that is totally unnecessary.
It's a little bit hard to hear there, but what's happening is people around him are yelling at him, you're lying, you're lying, you're lying. That's not what she said. And as a matter of fact, it's true. The judge in the first trial pointed out specifically that that's not what happened. That the first trial where Manafort got 2.5 or 3 years, they never ever explored the idea of Russian collusion. And yet there went his lawyer on the courthouse steps saying that this proves there was no collusion. And then in the next case with Judge Jackson, a whole nother judge, she said specifically, we did not explore Russian collusion in this case. And then the lawyer hits the front steps of the courthouse and says what? This proves in two courts that there was no collusion. And this particular thing just goes to conditioning the public to get that in their heads so that when we find out about how much freaking Russian collusion there was, we meet it with a little bit of skepticism. And maybe we just decide to take the president at his lie. Back in a moment.
California Congressman Devin Nunes is suing Twitter and two anonymous Twitter accounts for $250 million. He's suing a Twitter user known as Devin Nunes' mom. And this is a real quote. The other account that he's going after is called Devin Nunes Cow. Devin Cow. This is the kind of hardcore slander that got Nunes running to his lawyer. This is real. They wrote, Devin's boots are full of manure. He's utterly worthless. And it's pasture time to move him to prison. And maybe the craziest part of all of it, a reporter from the Washington Post dug this up. He wrote, last Congress, Devin Nunes co-sponsored a bill called the Discouraging Frivolous Lawsuits Act. And now he's suing a cow.
So there is an app where, and you may or may not have heard about this, that conservatives, MAGA hat-wearing conservatives, can download, and it will provide them with a safe space to wear their MAGA hats, their Klan hoods, or whatever. And I thought that was interesting because so often the complaint from conservatives is, we ain't gonna provide you with a safe space, okay? You don't get to have you a safe space, okay, little liberal? You need to get over it. Because there's America, and America, we got freedom, and if you can't handle it, da, 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 da. And I said, wait a minute, y'all looking for a safe space to wear your MAGA hats, huh? And there's a thing among conservatives, especially legislatively, where they say that they want to fight frivolous lawsuits. They say the courts are so packed full of, the courts are packed full, yes, but what the courts are packed full of are these corporations fighting accountability, you know, and fighting for contract enforcement. See, they say that they want less government and business and more business and government. That's the old saying, the old conservative saying. But what they really mean is when we break the law, hands off. But when someone does us wrong, oh, government, please help me. So Devin Nunes, the headline over at New York Magazine, and it's true, he's suing Twitter over these two accounts. Now, Devin Nunes, of course, the neo-Nazi from California that is one of the president's biggest supporters, vocally and otherwise. Just there's nothing Trump can do that's ever wrong to this guy, and it's so embarrassing. But Devin Nunes, he's all butthurt. He doesn't have a safe space to wear his MAGA hat. He can't even go on his Twitter account because there are two accounts, one named Devin Nunes Cow and one named Devin Nunes Mom, and they poke at him and they make fun of him. And God damn it, he wants a safe space. How dare you liberals do this to him? And despite the fact that he doesn't think that you should be able to sue when something wrong happens to you. And the other thing with the whole tort reform, conservatives want to limit the amount of money that people can sue a corporation for. That way, a corporation can write that into their business plan. So right now, say your car explodes, and just an example, you know, this isn't a law. Your car explodes, catches fire, it burns you to death inside, there's nothing left, they got to identify you by dental records, your family finds out about that, holy Christ, we don't even have a body that we get to bury, and they sue. Say, I don't know, Ford, just for argument's sake. I got nothing against Ford, but we're just going to, it's argument's sake, you know. And they sue Ford, and they get $10 million. And so the family goes, well, we're not whole, but we got a $10 million. And dagnabbit, that car company had to learn that lesson. And then the car company says, man, we lost $10 million. We better not F up like that again. But when they have tort reform, and the conservatives say, well, we need to have tort reform because people shouldn't win the lottery when they get these cases. Doesn't matter if corporations win the lottery. They just don't think you should win the lottery when these cases happen. And obviously the money doesn't make you any better off. But when say somebody like Ford loses $10 million on one car purchase, they tend to think again before they do what they do. And so conservatives call it tort reform. And what it does is it limits the amount of money that you can sue for when you get effing destroyed by their product. So at one point, it's limitless. And what the conservatives have been doing over the last 15 or 20 years is fighting to lower that, to lower it to less and less and less and less. Say, get that down to maybe $250,000. So no matter how much damage is done to you, no matter how many of your family members get destroyed by a particular product, you can't sue for more than $250,000, which is going to be chump change to these folks. And so what they say is, okay, so we're not going to have this safety feature and that safety feature and that safety feature and that safety feature. And let's go ahead and count on having this many lawsuits filed against us, write that into the cost of the car. And then when somebody sues us, it's fine. It's not like one person's going to get $10 million. You know, one person's going to get $250,000 and we can figure that out. So tort reform isn't about stopping the clogging of the courts. And it's not about protecting you. And it's not about stopping courtroom lotteries. It's about protecting the profits of millionaires and billionaires. And that's one of the things that Devin Nunes has been fighting for. It sounds good, tort reform. Anything with the word reform, God dang it, it sounds good. But now he's got a Twitter user, Devin Nunes Cow and Devin Nunes Mom, going after him. And he's all butthurt about it. How dare they do this? Don't they know how much he loves the president?
This is a tweet that's literally just a headline from the Fresno Bee, which is his hometown paper, which was about an event that was done at a winery he owns part of. And the headline is, a yacht, cocaine, prostitutes. Winery partly owned by Nunes sued after fundraising event. And you tweet that with all caps, holy crap, which is what he is trying to sue you for. Given how much talk we have had, particularly from conservatives, about the First Amendment and also safe spaces and the snowflakes on campus who don't like any countervailing ideas, what do you think about a sitting member of Congress suing a private citizen over a mean tweet?
Well, here's what I'll say about this. I'm a libertarian Republican, and I believe extremely strongly in the Bill of Rights and in our Constitution, all of it, not just parts of it, all of it. And that includes the First Amendment. The reason that the framers put that in place is specifically to protect the ability of citizens to criticize their government.
Never mind the single mom that has to constantly take, and is never-ending cycle of debt, because she has to constantly keep taking out payday loans to make ends meet. You know, never mind the people that are suffering, you know, from things like black lung disease, from being in the mines, you know, never mind them. You know, never mind the people that are dying for lack of access to healthcare, or people like me who do have healthcare but still have to come out of pocket with thousands and thousands. I'm still going through the thousands and thousands of dollars of money whenever I decide to use my insurance. Never mind all of that. The real problem is that conservatives are getting screwed and they're getting made fun of on Twitter. That homeless woman, that dead homeless woman, never mind her either. Whenever I think about a person who's down, I think about, even without knowing them, their whole life. That woman laying half in and half out of that tent. At some point, she was a baby. She was in utero. Somebody was pregnant with her. Somebody took care of themselves during pregnancy, likely. And then when the baby was born, I'm sure that everybody was excited. There were pink streamers hanging all over the place. Maybe it was a single mom. Maybe mom and dad had a room all set up for her. It was a joyous occasion. They were so happy. Their parents bring baby home, love baby, snuggle baby, take care of baby when baby is sick, change diapers, play with baby, you know, celebrate things like baby's first steps, baby laughs, first haircut, first day of school, first boyfriend, first heartbreak, gets her driver's license, maybe even gets her first car. Maybe, just maybe, man. And she had friends and she had family. She had people that loved her. Definitely. But here she is in Portland, Oregon in 2019, laying half in and half out of a tent. Probably died of an overdose. Was probably sexually assaulted. Nobody knows where she is. And nobody probably even noticed when she was gone. And when we decide to take on this worldview that if things are okay in our world, then things are okay in the whole world. That's so narrow view. We tend to not see things like that when they happen. And we tend to believe the things that are told to us rather than the things that we see with our eyes and that we hear with our ears.
I used to say, Tim, you got to start doing it over here. And you really have. I mean, you've really put a big investment in our country. We appreciate it very much, Tim Apple.
So he called Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, Tim Apple. And he was questioned about it immediately afterwards. And he goes, that's what I call him. He knows that I call him that. And he's cool with me calling him Tim Apple. It was a flub. It was a mistake. Okay. Don't lie about it. Just say, you know what? I screwed up. Tim Cook from Apple. I called him Tim Apple. It's a really easy thing. It's a teeny time, but he tells this lie. What are you doing? Don't lie. We all screw up. I've screwed up on this mic. Screw up when I talk to other people. I've screwed up when I've talked to clients on the phone and in person. You screw up. You flub. You say the wrong word. Say you said the wrong word. But Donald Trump is infallible. He can't believe that. That's not what happened. And so now what the president is saying isn't that it's cool for him to call Tim Cook, Tim Apple. He's saying that tape, that piece of tape that you heard right there, where he clearly called him Tim Apple, he's saying that that never happened. He never said that. Well, sir, here's the tape. He says, that's not me on the tape. He's tried this before. He did this with the Access Hollywood tape. At first, he goes, yeah, crap, that's me. Whoopsie poops. He shouldn't have done that. How gross. Oh, I shouldn't have said those things. Then when he became president, he goes, I think they made that tape up. I don't think I ever said those things. And so he tells us not to believe our eyes and not to believe our ears because those things aren't really happening. The only reality that there really is the reality that he creates for us. And that's the reality that we have to buy into.
A lot of people are asking because they love me and they ask me about a man named John McCain. So I have to be honest, I've never liked him much. Hasn't been for me. I've really probably never will. I endorsed him at his request and I gave him the kind of funeral that he wanted, which as president, I had to approve. I don't care about this. I didn't get thank you. That's okay. We sent him on the way, but I wasn't a fan of John McCain.
This is the president speaking at a tank factory. So there's a bunch of workers sitting around and some members of the military. Think about this. Think about these words being delivered by a president. Any president. President Barack Obama, President George W. Bush. Who would have stood for John McCain, who they consider an American hero? And that was part of the argument for making McCain president in 2008 instead of Obama, was the McCain served. McCain's an American hero. And Barack Obama is not, because he's a pretty boy. He ain't never seen the theater of war. But now it's cool. Because you got this guy as president and he's able to say and do whatever he wants. And he's telling anybody that'll listen right now, and it's stunning about how much he freaking hates John McCain. He's picking a fight with a dead guy. He'll tell anybody. So he goes to this defense factory, this tank factory, and they just sit there. And he thinks he's at one of his rallies. Like they're just going to, you know, jump up and just start, you know, throwing their white hands together and, you know, scream, yah! And then they don't. And it's weird and it's awkward. And what is he doing? It's more conditioning. The things that he says are true. The things that we see with our eyes and that we hear with our ears, those things aren't really happening. the Republicans, because they've been so pro-military in the past, they should be standing up and saying, hey, you don't do that to a former member of the Congress that also served in war and was a POW and, you know, had his shoulders destroyed. He couldn't lift his arms above his head or whatever. I mean, that was the old Republican Party. The new Republican Party has one guy that stands up and challenges the president on this kind of heresy. And I imagine that guy is only able to stand up because he isn't running for re-election.
Because he was flying combat missions and got shot down, was held as a prisoner. That's not your kind of guy. Who is your kind of guy? Your friends who falsified their records so they didn't have to go? I think that's the answer. I mean, I think he sees all of us who went to Vietnam as fools. We were the suckers. We were the stupid ones. We were the ones that didn't have the resources to be able to get out of the draft. He had the resources and he got out of it. So show us your bone spurs. Let's see those x-rays.
But as long as he's providing the world with all the rich with tax cuts, and as long as he's cutting environmental regulations so that they can poison the air and the water and the food, the Republicans are quite okay with what he's doing. So back to what I was talking about earlier with Mueller and SDNY. Once he's no longer president, and there's a pretty solid chance he can get beat next year or get beat in 2024. I'd like to think next year better than 2024, obviously, but I know I live in a country I'm surrounded by Nazis, so I know there's a pretty solid chance he could become president again. But once he leaves office, whatever's in that report could put him in legal jeopardy, maybe even put him in prison. What comes out of SDNY could do the same thing. And Michael Cohen said something really interesting a few weeks ago when he went in front of Congress. And he mentioned that the president is not going to leave office.
Given my experience working for Mr. Trump, I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power. And this is why I agreed to appear before you today.
So this guy that sent all these bombs to all of these people that you remember this guy. The gentleman's name was, and I use the term loosely, Caesar Sayoc, 57 years old. And he sent bombs to Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Robert De Niro, the CNN offices in New York and Atlanta. And so he pleaded guilty this week. And you say, oh, this is one guy. This one guy, one crazy person just did this stuff because the president is always calling for this kind of stuff to happen. Openly calling for attacks on people that he doesn't like, he disagrees with. He doesn't like CNN because they report things that are true about him. He's totally cool with Fox, but he hates when people report things that are true about him. And so this guy, when they found this guy, he's living in his van and it's covered in Trump stickers. And this guy was willing to go to war for Trump, willing to fight and die for Trump. And this guy is a microcosm. So he pleads guilty. He's going to go to prison. He's probably going to go to prison for life. He's being brought up on something like 50 counts, you know, of sending these mail bombs. But now that he's in front of the judge, my God, he's so sorry. Jeez, he didn't mean to. Scott, he didn't think the bombs would go off. Oh my God, he's so sorry. It's another weeping Nazi. But that's only one. There's plenty more that are absolutely willing to go to war for the president. I refer to them as the president's goon squads. The headline here, from Splinter News, oh, it's just the president threatened to unleash waves of violence on his political rival. So Trump sat down with Breitbart News, and he says here, and I quote, the left plays a tougher game. It's very funny. I actually think the people on the right are tougher, but they don't play it tougher, okay? I can tell you I have the support of the police, the support of the military, the support of the bikers for Trump. I have tough people. They don't play it tough until they go to a certain point. And then it would be very, very bad. So what is he talking about? He's talking about the hordes of white supremacists, police, military, police, military, bikers for Trump, all these hardcore right-wing groups that will fight and die for him and potentially even kill for him. It's been pointed out by more than a few conservatives that they've got about 8 billion more bullets on the right than we do on the left. Why? Because we're not a bunch of chickens. We're not a bunch of wimps. and we don't have a bunch of guns and ammunition. They point out that they've got way more bullets than us, and they're constantly calling for this. We're promoting this idea of a civil war. So on the heels of Michael Cohen, who knows the president almost better than anybody, saying he's not going to leave that office, with what might come out of SDNY or out of the Mueller report once Trump does leave office and he's no longer protected by the presidency, it's incredibly likely that this guy isn't going to want to leave and might just call out all of these fascist hordes to do his work for him. Melvin, are you trying to scare us? No, I just want you to put it in your mind, because he talks through the media. And I remember when Cohen said he won't tell you directly what to do, but he'll speak to you and you'll know what you're supposed to do that he wants you to do. And when he talks like this, I got the police, I got the military, I got the bikers for Trump, I got all the Second Amendment people, and they got lots and lots of guns, and it's going to be very, very bad. He's telling us that these are his armies. These are his brown shirts. No, these are his SS soldiers. These are the people that are going to fight and die for him and make sure that he remains president. And remember what I mentioned in the beginning. He also very much promotes the idea, or his people are totally cool with the idea of him never leaving office and even canceling the elections. It's the drip, 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 drip. And what does that mean? What's going to happen? And the media. The media loves to toy with the idea that they just might, you know, call this president out, or they might say some things that he doesn't like. But they never really do. They just let him go on and on and on. And I just want everyone else to take notice of this. Now, if he loses, okay, and he decides to get on Twitter and openly call out all of these white supremacist hordes that support him, will they mobilize? Will they hit the streets? Will they start killing people for him like he wants them to do? Or will they not? It's hard to say exactly what's going to happen. But for some reason, there's all these folks that really believe that he's on their side. One of the things that this president did was on the campaign trail in 2016, Trump digs coal. He's going to fight for those coal miner jobs. And I'll never understand why people love coal so effing much. It's insane. It's gross. It's dirty. And there's a whole bunch of dudes that have black lung disease from it. There's a story written by Dylan Loven, and it points out that for one guy that's got black lung disease, his treatments are $4,000 a month, and the government pays for these. And the fund that pays for these treatments is running out of money, and the Trump administration isn't doing anything about it and isn't even considering doing anything about it. So all these coal miners that he loves so much are about to run out of the money for their black lung disease treatments because of the inaction of the Trump people. So despite the fact that he's not doing anything for you, you know, he doesn't really support coal miners or the country or American ideas or any of that, there are still all these folks that are behind him. But remember, he's merely the symptom of the problem. He's not the real problem. Even once he's gone, the problem is still going to persist. I want to wrap up with one last story before I go. I just did my taxes. So, after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed. Okay, so let's see what's going to happen here. Did my taxes last week, and my taxes from the year before, the effective rate doubled. Let me say that again. The amount of taxes that I, as a small business, okay, so my business, just my business, made under $50,000, okay? Just my business. And then I got a job, and then my wife's got a job, so we put all that together. Obviously, we're doing fine, but the business taxes I paid doubled. Wait a minute. I thought the president just passed a tax cut. So let's look at Amazon. Amazon made $11.2 billion in profit. Oh my God. How much did they pay in taxes? Zero. A big fat zero. and they got a rebate. What? And so when you look at that, just the hard numbers, the real things that are happening, when you look at that, on $11 million in profit, Amazon pays nothing. On less than 50, my tax rate doubled this year. You don't have to do very much or go very far to know exactly who this guy is working for. And if folks choose to ignore that, well, I suppose it's going to be have to be up to the good people, which presumably would be you and I, to remedy that. Stay woke and stay tuned. Thank you for being here. On the Fire You Can't Put Out, my name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. Episode number 289. Whoa, whoa, almost to 300. Our official home, tficpo.podme.com. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. Email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We are the fire you can't put out. We will prevail. Promise you, the Trump Nazi hordes are not going to win. We will eventually. We will eventually. But you got to stay woke. You got to stay involved. Okay, keep it. All right. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin. Thank you, Kevin, for producing. And I want to thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I have woke you up, good morning.